Thank you all for attending this session, and please welcome Gillian Strillet from Chainblue.
Thank you. So some of you in the room have listened to me talk already this morning. For those of you that know either me or Paul, it's pretty obvious I'm not Paul. Unfortunately, Paul couldn't be with us today at quite short notice, but I did, for him dropping me in it, I did think we'd do a quick visual game as to work out why Paul couldn't come to Seville. Anybody unravel that story as to where Mr. Angus is today? Passport issues is a pretty good guess, Mike. So Paul Angus used his passport to get in an Uber in Washington, D.C. last week and got out of the Uber and didn't have a passport. So he had to fly home on an emergency passport, and therefore, and because he's lost his passport before, the passport office want two interviews with him to give him a new passport, because I think they think he's selling passports on eBay or something. But he had his second interview yesterday and was hoping to get the new passport in time to get here, and basically it's just not happening. He's not going to get it to next week. So I've stepped in to do his story. It was a bit late to sort of start changing the schedule. That was the only change I made to the presentation, was something about where Paul is. That's Paul's background. It would have been great if Paul was here to talk to you. He's the architect of this work we've been doing. He is infinitely more knowledgeable on this subject than I am, and I will put my hand up. Those of you who heard me talk earlier, I am a PMC member and committer in CloudStack. My focus isn't writing code and hasn't been for a long time, okay? So when it comes to questions at the end of this, I'm probably expecting to get 10%, okay? There are some other guys in the room who've got some experience with this work we've been doing, so I'm hoping we might get some answers to the questions I should be able to answer back from the room, or I can take those away and take them back to Paul. Flick through the obligatory marketing slides. Okay, so those of you who heard me talk earlier, obviously we work predominantly on the CloudStack project. What we are talking about here is some work we've been doing over the last 6 months, which is to bring together CloudStack. Ultimately, we set off with the challenge of bringing together an infrastructure orchestrator, an old-fashioned IaaS platform, and making it sit seamlessly with something that could orchestrate and run a containerized environment. Okay, and I'm going to talk about why that is in a second, because a lot of people, when we set off doing this, said, well, you're mad, you don't need to do that. But there are some very, very strong reasons for wanting to do this. So where this came from was, we all know, last 18 months, 2 years, my favorite people, the analysts, everybody's been going container crazy. And I'm sure everybody in this room gets the benefits that a containerized environment can bring us. More and more cloud native apps being written. People want faster, higher density units of application code. Is the VM still relevant? We're not sure, okay? We know the world is moving in that direction. And my guess, if I had a crystal ball, is in 10, 15 years' time, nearly all our code is going to be deployed in some sort of container. And the idea of isolating your application code in a virtual machine and all of that stuff that a virtual machine needs is going to be a really, really old idea. Okay? But we're at this sort of interesting juncture right now where, particularly in the public cloud space, people still consume virtual machines. That's what they consume. That's what they buy from those service providers, okay? Now, yes, there are lots of CAS, container as a service offerings, but the basic unit of compute is still the virtual machine, okay, in the cloud world. We see that changing, but there's an interesting situation here for particularly service providers, which is they've got an existing business model that's working, which is based around selling virtual machines and other bits, some storage and what have you. But at the same time, they've got a market and customers saying, this is the way it's going. So what do? Do they rip everything out? Do they say, okay, we're just going to sell things as a containerized offering? Do they carry on with VMs and try and bolt? We've spoken to a lot of service providers over the last 18 months who really don't quite know what to do. Okay, and that's where this idea came from with the work we've been doing. The other thing that adds to it is, you know, the container market, I don't even know if Gartner have called it a market yet, but as a concept is at the top of the hype curve, right? It's where everybody's looking. There's 1,000 people turning up to KubeCon. Everybody is looking at what's going to go on around the concept of Linux containers, okay? Now, if you're somebody who needs to implement this stuff, but you've got an existing business model based around something else which you don't want to disturb, that's some difficult choices you've got to make because the market is moving so quickly. There's vendors popping out left, right, and center. I mean, Docker seems to be getting another 100 million every week. There's all these startups popping up, all offering some sort of orchestration solution around containers. And we, about a year ago, had a look and said, okay, so who's doing stuff that's going to be good for cloud service providers? Okay, who's doing something that is going to be easy to fit in next to the existing business model, and most importantly for the people we work with, okay, is going to be multi-tenanted and can actually do things in complete isolation, because you know, if you are a public cloud provider, multi-tenancy is rule number one in the book. You have to keep people isolated from each other. And we couldn't see anybody that was, you know, really offering anything that wasn't really basically aimed at an enterprise solution. It wasn't really a service provider solution. Okay. So situation, the consumers, the people who are buying IaaS services, want their providers to have a container platform. They want it in the same experience, the same user experience, the same API experience as their traditional interaction with that organization, which is buying a virtual machine style offering. Okay. What should the service provider sell? Should they sell true containers as a service, as a price per hour per container? It's going to be really difficult. Should they continue selling VMs? Okay. How do you handle multi-tenancy? Do you just get rid of the virtual machine? And finally, how do I orchestrate all of this together? Because people want an experience, a user experience and an API experience, which lets them dip in and out of accessing physical, old-fashioned virtualized infrastructure versus a container-based infrastructure. And we couldn't find anything which really ticked the boxes. So in conjunction with one of our customers, we did that. We went out and built something, okay? And we built a thing which became known as the Cloud Stack Container Service. If I was a marketing genius, we would have probably called it Kubernetes in a box, and everybody would have then gone, wow, that's really exciting. But basically, it's an integration between Kubernetes and Apache Cloud Stack, okay? So we're bringing together, it's effectively a container orchestrator together with an infrastructure, a virtual infrastructure orchestrator. We chose the model that both Google and Amazon have used, and that was simply like, they're making this stuff work, okay? So that looks like the correct model to choose. And what Amazon have done with their container service and GCE on their side is basically the business model is they still sell the virtual machine. Okay. Now, I know everybody's going to sit in this room and say, oh, hold on a second, though. One of the things with containers is bare metal, right? Is I don't want the hypervisor involved. We see it as a temporary necessary evil. And the way we've architected this is we're not talking about a lot of hypervisors. We're talking about a relatively small number of hypervisors in the grand scheme of things, and producing a virtualized environment to then hold Kubernetes and the containers. Having said that, one of the things we'll talk about, our future plans, our roadmap, is Cloud Stack does support bare metal. We were talking about it yesterday, and is to bring those two pieces together so we can bolt that bit on top of the bare metal bit and completely remove the hypervisor. We're not there yet with that. Okay, so at the moment, it's Kubernetes based on virtual machines. We looked around. What do we build it on? Obviously, Cloud Stack, because that's what we do. We chose Kubernetes just because of the massive momentum it's getting at the moment. Just about getting some good production stories going with it, and offers functionality on an open source basis like we just couldn't see anywhere else. I know there's probably people in the room say, well, Mesos might have been a better option. This ticked the boxes for what the people we were working with at the time wanted. Okay, and from a commercial model, when a service provider deploys this, they still carry on selling virtual machines, networking, storage, whatever. They do not charge for the container, okay, or any containers or for Kubernetes. They can charge to enable that service for a customer, but ultimately they're selling still selling virtualized resources. And that was a key design principle, because that means they don't have to change their business models. They can bolt this over the top, and it's a very easy to deploy plugin we've created. Users can then start building environments, Kubernetes environments, deploying apps or Docker, what have you. The bills, all of that commercial side can remain exactly the same. It's exactly the same way as Google and Amazon have done it. Oops. So what we created was a UI and API plugin for CloudStack, recognizing some people will just want to lift this in and get the UI experience and away they go. Some people will want to integrate it on top of it or into a customer portal or something like that. And what we do is we orchestrate the deployment of Kubernetes into a new construct that we've put in CloudStack, which we call a container cluster. Okay. And a container cluster is a group of virtual machines that we have centralized control over, and we have control over the networking between those machines. Okay. We deploy Kubernetes into those clusters and then allow the users to go straight through, whether they're using kubectl or they're using the Kubernetes dash, they still call it the dashboard, or they now call it the Kubernetes API, and exposing that through in a seamless experience to the user. So what the user's getting basically is the ability to go and create an environment, bang, up comes a familiar looking Kubernetes CLI or UI, all within the IaaS environment that they're used to. Okay, so we create these clusters, we create secure access through to the Kubernetes endpoint and the dashboard. We allow pass through into the VMs. The VMs behind the scenes are CoreOS VMs. But again, we've made all of this extensible and configurable. We've chosen CoreOS. That's what we wanted to use. You could use whatever you wanted. And what this add-in is doing is acting as a control plane, very much like CloudStack is a control plane for infrastructure. What this is doing is just acting as a control plane to configure a Kubernetes environment. It then doesn't really get involved in what goes on in that environment, okay? Because that's then what you will then use kubectl, Kubernetes UI, or whatever tooling you've got to do that. Okay, am I making sense? Doing Paul's talk. Okay. So we created this concept, a container cluster, which we might rename at some stage. I'll explain why in a second. We create that, and we group that, and we can apply control to that group of virtual machines. We then deploy Kubernetes into that, configure them as a Kubernetes cluster. We build the Kubernetes master, the Kubernetes, somebody help me, worker nodes. Depending on what the user has specified they want through the API call or through the user interface. That can all be done via the API, and then we've bolted a UI plugin in as well to give a very simple experience. And in terms of interactions with CloudStack, this is a user, not an admin, is obviously interacting through the UI or the API, okay, for the orchestration of the environment. This is a normal CloudStack environment, and then they're interacting through the virtual router into a set of virtual resources when they're actually using that infrastructure. And what we've done is put this concept, this container cluster, on the side, so they still interact through the virtual router using kubectl or whatever tooling they want to use. Okay, the container cluster is a collection of CoreOS VMs, one of which is the Kubernetes master, running Docker, Rocket, whatever. Again, it's all configurable, okay? And then a number of worker nodes on the back of that, okay? But CloudStack sees that now as a cluster and can get data out of that in terms of its status. It can poll it, it can start that cluster, it can stop, it can manage that as a single cluster. Okay, me demonstrating this was always gonna go wrong. So in return for losing his passport, Paul's recorded the demo for us. But he said, I've got to talk through it because the sound wasn't very good. How do I play this in here? Where's my mouse? Yep, there. Okay, this is a vanilla, straightforward Apache Cloud set. No, there's no modifications being made. I think it's 4.5, might be 4.9. I don't know, that doesn't really matter. See all the standard Cloud Stack stuff down the side, and then we've got our UI plugin which sits there. We've used the Kubernetes logo, but I'll talk in a second about why that might become more generic. Just an empty Cloud Stack environment. Installing this plugin takes literally 15 minutes. Yep, there is a few decisions to make. It is a 15-minute job. Okay, I'm going to have to stop it there, or I don't have time. I shall try that, Will. Okay, so you can see there's one container cluster running already in the background. He's just hit add container cluster, giving it a name, description, choosing which cloud stack zone to go and deploy that in. So we were talking about the fact cloud stack has multiple zones, so we can push this to whichever zone, whichever zone they want. And by the way, I'm a user here. I'm an end user of cloud stack. I'm not an administrator. I then choose the service offering, i.e. the VM size that I want to make my worker nodes, okay? Which, depending on who you are, you might have small, tiny, micro, you might have specific combinations of CPU and RAM listed. I can then specify what network I'm going to give that cluster if I have an existing network that I want to put the Kubernetes cluster on. If you don't specify it, we go and create, well, this goes and creates it automatically. It will create a network, a Cloud Stack shared network associated with that container cluster. The cluster size is the number of worker nodes. So we always end up with one extra CoreOS VM when you click OK here, and that's the master. And then if I put 15 in my cluster size, I'll get a total of 16. I'll get the master and the 15 worker nodes. Okay. And optionally, the SSH key pair is just if anybody then wants to connect directly to the CoreOS VMs for troubleshooting or anything like that, probably wouldn't need that on a normal basis. Spacebar, you reckon, Will? Damn.
How do you specify the size of the master?
Very, very good question.
Sorry, I messed up your demo.
I don't think mess was the word I was going to use. Well, trouble is, I don't know where this screen is. Come on, where are you? What I'm going to do. Don't know where it's, but there it is. No, it's fine. I'm just working out where. There we go. Oh, start again at the beginning. Oh, jeez. The video keeps taking my mouse away. Right, I'm gonna not touch it and just talk. We'll do this again. So, yep, got the adding in. List the container clusters, manage those, start stop them, and get some data about them. We went through the simple process of creating a container cluster. Mike's question: where do you specify the size of the master? That's a 2.0 thing. It came up very, very quickly with. When this went out and people started using it, they want a different size master to the worker nodes. At the moment, it's the same size as the worker nodes.
It just sounded like you specifically said that was the size of the worker nodes.
That's the number of worker nodes. That's the service offering to use is basically we create them all at the same size, which was a bad decision.
I just was confused, but that makes sense.
Okay, so here we go. It's coming up here. There was an existing one running already. That's going off, creating the CoreOS VMs, pulling down Kubernetes, deploying Kubernetes into a cluster, sorting out the networking, yada, 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 yada. I need to now keep up. And then once it comes up, returning the Kubernetes API endpoint and the dashboard endpoint. I need to really stop. I'll keep talking. There's the dashboard that's appeared within the CloudStack environment. Okay, and what we've done is take the Kubernetes dashboard, just pull it in. It runs in one of the worker nodes, and that just gets served up through here. Paul's now just going off to the Docker repo. It could be absolutely anywhere. More than likely to be a private repository if it's a you know, non-service provider or even a service provider use case. And he will be doing Nginx, I should think. No, Ghost. Okay. The key thing that there's nothing revolutionary there. Okay, we're going to deploy a Kubernetes cluster and deploy an app on it, but we're doing it all within that same user experience. Yeah, with no changes to the process that the users are used to. What's he doing?
Did you say that Kubernetes is not part of the template that you install?
We pull Kubernetes down.
You do pull it, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And we've got some configuration about that and when you do that, and some control around that.
Okay.
No, we've tried to keep as much out of the template as we can.
Okay, so that you can let other people pick what they want. Okay.
Okay, what's he going to do now? Okay, so he's going to show that because he didn't specify a network, it's gone and created the shared network for the cluster to sit on. What Paul's now doing is going to expose those services publicly. Okay, and with this iteration, this is effectively a manual thing. So he's going through and adding the firewall and the load balancer rules in CloudStack to actually get through to that service. Okay, we're working at the moment on actually automating that. So when you go and create the applications in Kubernetes, it's going to tell CloudStack, I have a new service available, and it's going to do this stuff if you want to. If you want to tick the box to say, make publicly available at that stage. Some chance to catch up. Okay, so this is all relatively standard CloudStack stuff.
Hit the space bar.
There is some stuff that's worth seeing in a minute. I had a look at this morning.
If there's anything in there in terms of like the CloudStack features or such that you're interested in, when I do the live demo of setting up CloudStack later, I can go through all that.
Okay, so he's gone back into the Kubernetes dashboard. You see we've got one pod running for Ghost, one for Nginx. He's created the routes through to that within his infrastructure, within his consumed infrastructure. He's going off to see what the endpoint is.
What happens if you pick... You select too many resources. Does it build up half of the VMs maybe and end there? Or what does the failure situation look like?
So you choose a cluster with 9,000 worker nodes in it. We fall back on the standard CloudStack resource stuff.
Okay.
And it's all transactionalized as well.
Okay,
so if that happened, CloudStack would come and say, you're not allowed because you've got account limits or there's just not enough resources, and we'd just roll it back.
Okay, so you would delete those VMs okay.
And here we go, there's a Ghost app running in a container in a Kubernetes cluster within CloudStack exposed publicly. Good, is that everything he did? Yeah, I think that's it. I think this then actually loops again. Yeah.
What about the names, the registry, or do you use console or something like that?
The registry at the moment is a global setting. So is was that what you mean in terms of choosing the registry?
I'm talking about the registry of the Docker. I'm talking about the registry of the
startup a couple of Dockers.
Yeah.
And so you need to assign, instead of using an IP, all of us use a name. Okay. So I don't know if you are using a console like product from HashiCorp or something like that.
You mean like Cube Control or something?
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, you can. I probably didn't get that over very well. We've exposed that endpoint. You can just use Kube Control to talk directly to that, or Compose, or whatever tool
you
want.
But you don't include this kind of functionality on the platform itself?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you decided to choose, for example, the core OS. You decided to choose Kubernetes.
Correct.
But you didn't decide to put an extra piece, for example, to make the full stack, because for me, the work ends up when you put the service name. Okay, an IP is something noisy.
No, I think I understand your question, although I might be struggling. In terms of exposing that service publicly, okay, that's part of the ongoing work moment, which is about taking do they call them a service in Kubernetes? I think. Okay. And then exposing that out automatically instead of doing this thing with the IP addresses what have you. We worked with a partner company on this, and we've made some commits into Kubernetes to start to enable that. I'm actually on the verge of what I know here, but I could get somebody to answer that question in more detail. We've made some commits to enable Kubernetes to be telling CloudStack what's going on and expose those
services.
So the logic being, you're in Kubernetes or Kube Control or what have you, you expose a service, it will just automatically flow through. And I think, is it called a provider or something in Kubernetes or something like that?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we created the concept of the container cluster, auto-deployed the dashboard, deployed a couple of apps, created the firewall load balancing rules, and then accessed those applications. Well, I didn't, Paul did. The API calls we've added to CloudStack, there's three, quite simple: create container cluster, and it accepts most of the stuff you saw going into that dialog box at the beginning. List container cluster iterates all of the container clusters and lets you read their properties, and that's what we use to display the list of clusters and the endpoints and all of that sort of information, and then delete container cluster. So it's a very simple API extension. I think I touched on this before. The reason we chose these two things, well, obviously chose CloudStack because that's where the people we work with, that's the technology we work with, is Apache CloudStack. Chose Kubernetes because we saw that being the best bet to do this at the first stage. But through configuration, you can choose either Docker engine or Rocket. Also, again, you can choose what networking you want to happen within that environment. I think we're using Flannel by default, but if you have Weaveworks, whatever their product is, again, we can do all of that through configuration. And this configuration is basically a set of settings stored in CloudStack and a base configuration file that we pump into the VMs when at first starts through. CloudStack has a concept called user data, like cloud init style concept. We pump those in and tell the VMs what to actually go and do, what to download, and how to configure themselves. So the use case we were looking to address was that first one, which was, okay, we want a seamless experience where our customers can start to deploy some stuff inside a containerized environment, but we want that in the same place. But then it started to get interesting when we started to show people, because by creating this concept of a cluster within CloudStack, people were going, oh, that's quite interesting. So, of course, Docker Swarm, you could use the same model and the same thing. And we've created quite an extensible framework in terms of the configuration that gets pumped into the machines very, very extensible. And we've had a few conversations with people. Swarm is an obvious one, Mesos, Hadoop even, that actually what we've done is create an environment. If you want to deploy a Hadoop cluster, okay, yes, you would normally do that however you do it onto to physical machines, but we've now got effectively an API call in CloudStack which would let you pump the data into where to go and download the install, push whatever you want in at first use and perform whatever configuration you want. So we're now sort of exploring ideas about what else we can do with this sort of structure, and who else might find it useful. What we're working on at the moment, so that was the first one we were talking about, automating the exposing of services out. The moment we don't support resizing of the clusters. So you build a cluster of, let's say, 20 worker nodes. That's your space for operating your Kubernetes cluster, okay? You can, as a user, hack and go and add into that cluster. And once you're in through kube control, you can do that. But it's not a nice, easy experience, so we're adding that. This was, I think, the thing I'm probably most excited about. CloudStack has got a mechanism for auto-scaling. It's always had it. And what we're looking to do is start to auto-scale the virtual infrastructure as the requirements of the Kubernetes cluster go up or come down. Okay. Roll that forward to the fact that CloudStack supports bare metal and we can scale. What we've therefore got is a solution. I mean, one of the great things about Kubernetes, you want another 10 worker nodes, bang, off you go. Okay? Very, very quick, done in half a second. Okay? But you're pretty much limited to the size of that cluster, the number of servers it's running on, the number of virtual servers it's running on. But what we want to do is actually take that elasticity out to the physical level. So as your environment needs to get bigger, we can scale it up, whether it's physical, virtual, or what have you. And that really isn't difficult to do. That's just a time thing, because we've already got this mechanism in CloudStack, and it's just a question of pinning the two things together, picking up the events, etc., etc. Automating the update of the Kubernetes version, independent sizing of master node, HA for master nodes, use of distributed etc as a data store, using anti-affinity groups. CloudStack's already got this concept that we can have affinity and anti-affinity groups, and you can do that at the VM level. We can do that at the cluster level, so our data store can be somewhere else and distributed wherever we want and force it to be away from other nodes. Using CloudStack volumes for data persistency. So get this right. Kubernetes last version, somebody might have to correct me here, I think introduce persistent storage. Anybody help me with that? Yes, thank you. We're now making it able to use CloudStack data volumes to do that. And then pulling together the bare metal work that's happened in CloudStack previously end to end, so we can then deploy this onto to physical boxes. Okay. We set about doing this. This came from a customer demand. Yeah. So you know, we'd seen the problem. We had a particular customer who wanted something, and we worked on this initially as a POC, got it through, got it into to production for them. For various non-technical reasons, we couldn't open source all of the work at that stage. We were allowed to license it, and we had a few people came and bought this as a proprietary product from our company. We weren't allowed to do it in the open source community, which isn't great for us because we're an open source company. The plan always was to donate it to the Apache CloudStack project as quickly as we could legally get away with doing, which actually got lifted last week. So today, we have opened the repo up. It's there for anybody to take, and kicked off the process to donate this, the IP of this into the ASF. And we announced that, I think, yesterday or something like that. So it's there, free to take. You obviously need CloudStack. It isn't going to be a lot of use unless you've got CloudStack. And at the moment, it's only going to be any use if you want to put Kubernetes on top of CloudStack. But it isn't a massive task to get it to do Swarm, to do anything in theory. I'd really welcome anybody who wants to take it, have a look. In theory, at some stage, send in some pull requests, any feedback, any ideas. Okay, it's actually in production with a couple of organizations, but you know, there is feature work to do, and you've already seen the stuff we're working on. We'd love to hear what other people, what ideas other people have got. So hopefully, after we go through the formal contribution process, it will come under the governance of the Apache Cloud Stack project, the framework, and we can start just discussing on our mailing list and what have you. Okay, I have nothing else to say on the subject. Any questions? Mike, do you want...
What's the first, is it going to be 4.5? Is that going to be the first release that you'll have that contributed to, you know, Cloud Stack?
Okay, so it supports, at the moment it's a plugin.
Right.
Okay. So the point is you put it over the top of your Cloud Stack install. We support 4.5 upwards.
Okay.
So, and that's mainly about just making sure database schema doesn't conflict. And
right, conflict. Right. So would your contribution go just into master, or were you thinking of backporting it to make sure, it looks like it already works in 4.5 and, you know.
I don't know, okay. Because that's probably what's going to be discussed on the mailing list over the next few weeks in terms of what's the best way to do this.
Just as a previous release manager, I can almost guarantee that it won't go back beyond the latest LTS, so 4.9 is probably the earliest it will get in.
Yeah. Okay.
I have an unrelated question. I'll ask
4.9, Mike. Okay. 4.9 is the answer. A question here?
So like in terms of like admin and security models, so we basically got like sort of like the admin of on Cloud Stack level, you got the admin sort of like of the Vim in which the master for the containers is deployed, and then you got the admin for the containers being deployed, and of course you got security tokens for each at each of those level or SSH keys. How do you see that sort of like evolve? Do you sort of like see that like a subtenant, or how do you kind of like want to structure this long term?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
Let me get somebody to. I almost couldn't comment. I've gone as far as I can. Oh, no, I apologize. Will probably answer my question.
My understanding from the other people that have been looking at this is essentially each tenant would be creating their own Kubernetes cluster, and they would be running their own cluster. So there would be it wouldn't be a shared cluster between tenants. And
I think that's the easy start, and then of course you get the thing like, okay, so we can sort of like have a subtenant within that, right? Because that's the theory of like a wolf. Allows for
applications
and the price and so on.
Right. So I know where you're going with that, and I think that there is some potential there, but at the same time, I think that needs a little bit more thought before that is realized.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, I maybe slightly misunderstood the question before I went, I can't answer it at all. There is... You know, one of the principles was around, from the multi-tenancy viewpoint, we're keeping that at the existing level. Yeah, everything from a security boundary viewpoint should be done at that existing level. It's what makes this relatively straightforward, because the customer is still aware. I mean, if you've used Google Container, you think you're going and getting a cluster, and actually what you can see are the instances being created behind the scenes. So we use exactly the same.
Yeah, but that's exactly like in AWS and Google, like one of the big problems for enterprises, that they sort of like can't have, they've got multi-tenancy at that level, but
yeah,
they can't have the multi-tenancy
like one level down or two level downs, which is exactly what you need,
yeah,
for compliance reasons in enterprises.
Yeah.
Just to address that, because for the Kubernetes stuff, it's hard to kind of address right now because it just got open source today, right? So I know that the two of us have a relationship around this, but we haven't talked about Kubernetes. We actually operate cloud.ca, which is a public cloud in Canada, and we have a layer on top of Cloud Stack, which is an infinitely multi-tenant environment. And so one of the things that we would potentially be looking at is offering something like that. But in Cloud Stack, it is a little bit challenging because you don't have the infinite tenancy problem, the solution. So The way that you could potentially work around this in the context of CloudStack, which I haven't talked to Giles of whether or not that is possible, is to deploy this as a project, in a project.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether or not that's possible in the current way of doing it, but essentially as a project, you could then limit the users who have access to that. So you could have an organization and then create multiple projects, one for each department, and then give the users of that organization access to only that project. And so you would be able to, in theory, do that today if it supports project being able to deploy into a project. Then you could do it through using CloudStack projects that could potentially give you that functionality.
Any more questions? No. Okay, just before I finish, those of you, thanks for coming to this. Those of you who have been to the CloudStack Talks, Will is, what time are you talking at?
3:30.
And is going to do a detailed demo around how quickly it is to get a CloudStack environment deployed. We've all been talking about it this morning, about how quick it is. So if you can come and watch, we'll do that at 3:30. But other than that, thank you very much.